Come in. The night air is chill and you must need to eat and rest.
Okay.
Have you heard them? Those fearful sounds in the dead of night? The muffled creak of a loosened board? The shuffling step of a ghostly figure?
In a horrific time, in a horrible world, I have been asked to try and horrify you.
True tales of the supernatural.
All in fun, of course. A challenge in horror, so to speak.
I wish I knew what was out there.
All new spooks.
There was even sexual contact between extraterrestrials and human beings.
There's a big one.
Now, I know that you're not a person who is easily frightened.
War.
Something is amiss.
Monsters, ghosts, the dead. Who gets scared of that sort of thing anymore? You don't. Or do you?
Welcome to my house.
Do you ever think of the undead? The ghostly ones crowded under their gravestones, the restless dead, millions of them there under the ground.
Ghosts are sort of psychic wallpaper.
May we try something? Turn your lights off. Yes, all of them. Lights out, everybody. Now then, sit down in a chair and turn your back to the loudspeaker. Yes, turn your back. Now sit quietly, very quietly. The room very quiet.
Something is wrong.
Now whatever I say, don't turn around. Remember that. Don't turn around. Do you hear that? Now don't turn around. Something is coming up behind you, no? Don't turn around. It's coming closer and closer and closer.
There is this group of mysterious individuals controlling events on Earth that are, monetary conspiracies and...
What brings you out this far?
The psychotronic warfare, people are being damaged by all of these sort of mysterious radiations and sort of merges into this poltergeist thing, that there's something happening that is bad for us or that is going to injure people or kill people, and that there's
all new spooks.
Something has to be done to stop it, that governments and conventional science is unable or unwilling to do anything to sort of stem the tide of inevitable disaster.
Tonight,
lights out.
Hello and welcome to Spooky Time on the Night Air. We've handed the keys of the vaults to Tony Barrell for a spooky signature show. As well as the usual, Dr. Frankenstein, Count Dracula, and the veteran US broadcaster Arch Obler, who ran a show in the 1940s called Lights Out. There's some philosophers of other realities, Colin Wilson, Eric von Daniken, and Stan Deo, with some of their own weird science. And a professor of quantum physics, with proof that there's no such thing as spooky action at a distance. Oh yes, and lots of spooky tunes.
We are the Spooky Men. We build enormous structures.
Come closer. Don't turn. Putting out its hand toward your neck. Skeleton hands reaching for your neck.
I stood in silence where I was, for I did not know what to do. Suddenly, I heard a heavy step approaching behind the great door. Then there was the sound of rattling chains and the clanking of massive bolts drawn back. A key was turned with a loud grating noise of long disuse, and the great door swung back. Within stood a tall old man, clean-shaven, save for a long white moustache, and clad in black from head to foot. The old man motioned me in with his right hand with a courtly gesture. "Welcome to my house. Enter freely, and of your own will." He moved impulsively forward, and holding out his hand, grasped mine with a strength which made me wince, in effect as cold as ice, more like the hand of a dead than a living man. "Count Dracula?" He bowed in a courtly way as he replied, "I am Dracula. Come in. The night air is chill, and you must need to eat and rest."
"No, you weren't scared, were you? All right, to continue on our challenge in horror, let me try you with the psychotype."
Now, this apparently went on way back before the tale of Garden of Eden also, or an attempt like this was made where the rebels were trying to clone portions of themselves into an army to overthrow the established order of the universe, wherever that is. This was discovered, or perhaps known all along, by the conscious mind of God, and the rebels at that time were disenfranchised. Some of them were put into a type of, I guess you could call it an electromagnetic prison. They were inside the earth, as far as we can read from the Hebrew, down inside of a bottomless pit, which is the inside of a sphere.
"You know the sort of thing. That after it starts, pretty soon you just can't stand it and you want it to stop, but it doesn't stop, and when it stops, you're sorry that it stopped."
"My name is Victor Frankenstein. I have described myself as always having been imbued with a fervent longing to penetrate the secrets of nature."
"Which is where the dead cat comes in."
"Chance, or rather, the evil influence, the angel of destruction, which asserted omnipotent sway over me from the moment I turned my reluctant steps from my father's door, led me first to Mr. Kremper, Professor of Natural Philosophy. After having made a few preparatory experiments, he concluded with a panegyric upon modern chemistry, the terms of which I shall never forget."
"Okay, here's how it works. A cat is shut up in a steel chamber with a Geiger counter and a piece of some radioactive substance. According to quantum physics, the system has no determined state. So until we look, the cat both is and is not alive. Which seems pretty silly."
"These philosophers have indeed performed miracles. They have acquired new and almost unlimited powers. They can command the thunders of heaven, mimic the earthquake, and even mock the invisible world with its own shadows." Such were the professor's words. Rather, let me say, such the words of the fate enounced to destroy me. As he went on, I felt as if my soul were grappling with a palpable enemy. One by one, the various keys were touched which formed the mechanism of my being. From this day, natural philosophy, and particularly chemistry, became nearly my sole occupation."
And I'm talking quantum physics with Hugh Price, Professor of Philosophy at the University of Sydney.
The argument turned on the fact that you can have simple quantum systems in which two particles can interact and then go their separate ways. But because they've interacted, their properties are correlated in certain ways. So if you know something about one, you can infer something about the other without having to perform a measurement on it. So in the particular case they considered, if you have two of these particles prepared in the right way, you can consider the first particle and say, well, if we measure the position of this particle, then we'll know for certain what the result of a position measurement on the second particle would be, even if we don't perform that measurement. Similarly, if we measure the momentum of the first particle, then we'll know for certain what the result of measuring the momentum of that other particle, the second particle, would be without having to actually measure it. And moreover, the second particle can be as far away as we like. We can wait as long as we like and let these particles travel as far apart as we like, and we'll still be able to make these measurements and draw the same conclusions. And at that point, Einstein said, first of all, the fact that we can predict with certainty what the result of a measurement on that distant particle would be means there has to be something in reality out there responsible for the result of that measurement. Secondly, and this is what Einstein and Podolsky and Rosen called the principle of locality, what we choose to measure over here can't affect the reality over there. As I said, the second particle can be, in principle, it could be on the other side of the solar system. So that means that since we know that if we did perform a measurement here, there would be an element of reality over there, and whether we choose to perform a measurement over here can't make any difference by the principle of locality, that means that distant part of reality is there anyway, and it's there both for position and for momentum, which means that that quantum particle has both a precise position and a precise momentum in the way that's supposed to be ruled out by Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, interpreted in the way that Bohr and Heisenberg wanted to interpret it, as telling us that reality itself was fuzzy.
So the principle of locality states that there's no action at a distance.
Exactly.
I myself become increasingly convinced that the answer to certain basic problems, like, you know, when did time begin? How did the universe begin? Lies, as it were, outside this normal three-dimensional world that we live in. Lies almost in a completely different dimension, which is accessible to the right side of the brain, oddly enough.
One of the phenomena which had peculiarly attracted my attention was the structure of the human frame, and indeed any animal endued with life. To examine the causes of life, we must first have recourse to death, to spend days and nights in vaults and charnel houses. I saw how the fine form of man was degraded and wasted. I saw how the worm inherited the wonders of the eye and brain. I doubted at first whether I should attempt the creation of a being like myself, or one of simpler organization. But my imagination was too much exalted by my first success to permit me to doubt of my ability to give life to an animal as complex and wonderful as man.
Breathe it in.
The night air.
Let it blow.
The night air.
In your ear.
But before we get there, let's meet Olivia Newton-John's maternal grandfather, Einstein's lifelong friend, the great physicist Max Born.
It's, in a sense, thanks to Born, who, as you say, was Olivia Newton-John's grandfather, that the phrase spooky action at a distance has gone into the lexicon in this area, because it actually comes from a letter that Einstein wrote to Max Born late in Einstein's life in 1947, saying that basically he couldn't be satisfied with the quantum theory because it contained these spooky actions at a distance. So Einstein's hope, right up until his death, was that quantum theory would eventually be replaced or supplemented by some sort of extra theory which would get rid of this spooky action at a distance.
This is the Blue Network.
You're still there?
I wish I knew what was out there.
And there's more to come.
Ooh. What do you think?
Why?
It's the sort of horror that was most effective on radio after midnight, to make you wish, as you pull the bed covers over your head that night, that the author had been strangled while very young.
What is it?
I call this little opus The Dark.
A man.
Oh, no. It can't be.
Yes, I tell you, yes, it's a man. A man. And he's been turned inside out. But the skin is the inside. The raw flesh is the outside. Organs hanging.
Yeah.
It's a miracle. A man turned inside out. Like you turn a glove inside.
Yeah, it's alive. It's alive.
I see.
Alive?
Yes.
Look quickly. There. You see it? Where? Here, take my binoculars. See that wingspan, that huge beak and pointed head? There it is. Do you see it?
So far away, I can tell.
It's disappeared now, over the top of the plateau.
But you saw it, somebody. You saw it.
Oh, I saw something flying, Challenger. But it was undoubtedly some form of a stork.
There seems to be something wrong with our mechanism. And this is the thing that obsesses me.
Colin Wilson, British philosopher, author, student of the para-religious, the sci-fi, and the pseudo-impossible.
Now, the paranormal seems to indicate that we possess powers that we don't normally understand.
Call it critical mass propaganda.
And for example, there's very, very good evidence for precognition, for actual real glimpses of the future.
Call it Colin Wilson talking about things they'd rather not think about.
Now, this is obviously totally impossible because the future has not happened yet.
Colin Wilson thinking about things you'd rather not talk about.
If we possess the power to get these glimpses of the future, then there's something about consciousness that we do not understand.
The Parallel Brain Box meets Faculty X in the Colin Wilson tapes. Wednesday and Thursday nights, 8:30 on JJ.
No, it's not JJ, but the mysteries of science are spooky enough. I'm Brent Clough with The Night Air, wondering about the way quasi-science plays with your head. One of its grand masters is Colin Wilson, recorded 30 years ago for 2JJ, talking about cosmic strangers. Wilson was an advocate of dowsing, as pioneered by Thomas Lethbridge, a famous British spiritualist who conducted experiments in haunted places all over the world.
I can't help wondering again and again how far they in some strange way depend upon us, like poltergeists, in other words, upon the energy that we give them, that they can take from us or with which we endow them. In Mysteries, I tell a very curious story. Lethbridge and his wife Mina one day went down to the beach at Ladrum to collect some seaweed for the garden. It was a damp January day, and as they walked onto the beach, both of them suddenly felt an unaccountable depression, which they did not mention to one another. Well, then Mina went wandering away down the beach and wandered up onto the cliff. And as she stood there on the cliff, she suddenly had a curious feeling as if someone was urging her to jump over. She was making a sketch. Of course, you know, she ignored it and went back to Tom. They then got back in the car and drove back home when Lethbridge said to her, "Did you feel as depressed as I did?" And she said, "Yes, as a matter of fact, I did." Then they both observed something else. The depression had ceased quite abruptly when they'd walked out of a particular area. And oddly enough, that area was where a stream came down the cliff and ran across the beach. They'd felt most depressed close to the stream, and as soon as they'd walked a certain distance from the stream, it was almost as if they'd stepped out of a sort of...
No!
Across a line or through an invisible wall, and suddenly they felt fine.
I've got to get out of here. I've got to tell them all about you. I've got to tell everyone there's something like you loose in the world. Got to warn everybody. Get off me. No.
Lethbridge was fascinated by this because when he was a little boy, he and his mother had gone walking in a wood and had been overcome by this same curious depression.
And a week later, they'd heard that a gamekeeper had committed suicide, and they'd been standing within a few yards of his body while they were standing in this wood. And again, the wood was damp. Now, what Lethbridge believed was this, that the depression of the gamekeeper about to commit suicide had in some way been photographed, as it were, on the electrical field of the dampness of the water, and was therefore around them, so to speak, like a dim photograph. And being a dowser, he had picked this up. He thinks that on that beach, the same kind of thing had happened. In fact, Mina then checked back and discovered that a man had committed suicide from the precise spot where she'd been standing, a man, again, in a state of intense depression. So once again, it looks as if the scenery had somehow photographed the depression, photographed the feeling. On the other hand, if he'd just won the football pools, then in all probability she'd have felt immensely happy standing on that spot. But he thinks that all that happens is that electrical fields can somehow photograph human emotions and have probably, moreover, photographed almost everything that has ever happened on Earth.
No!
I can communicate. I can hear voices in my head, just like any spoken voice. And I can see pictures mentally, just like watching television. It's so clear. Other times, when there's power's on me, and not even sometimes when the power's not on me, but I can feel hands grasping my hands, and they pull me out of the body, and I can feel my two bodies separating. Now, when that's happened, I've been taken out of the body by my mother, who died a few years ago. And after having been taken out of the body, I've met all kinds of relations, like my mother and father and brother. They're all dead. But I see them every now and then, because they come and they take me out of the body. I also see quite a lot of people who are still alive on Earth, because they go to sleep and they spiritually leave their body. Even though they don't remember, I go out of the body and I talk to them, have little conversations with them, and then come back in again. I remember it, but they don't. And some of these people don't even believe in out-of-body travelling, but they're still doing it at night time.
You're not seeing things, Jim. That's just what it is.
We've been studying those mysterious lights and their effect on the water for some time now.
And frankly, we're worried. What if that curtain of light is in reality a sort of magnetic siphon controlled by intelligent beings from outer space?
This has been quite a shock. I can't find the words to apologize properly. Challenger, you were quite right, and I beg you to forget what I have said and done in the past.
Somebody, I've forgotten already. Here, let's shake hands on it. Now you can share my feelings.
Yes, but this is an incredible piece of knowledge. The world must be told of your discovery immediately.
Oh, well, Seekers, I guess this is the end. Or is it only the... No, it's the end.
First, who has made the makers? It could be that the makers again have been made by some others, and so on. So you can play back this game through billions of solar systems and billions of years, and finally you have to arrive to a starting point where, with all respect, I would say with all religion, you have to say, here is no creation, or here is God, here is the beginning, here is what we don't understand anymore, so you won't lose a concept of God in this idea. A second possibility would be, well, I take a piece of paper and I make a perfect round circle on the paper and I give this paper to my neighbor and I ask him, please tell me, where did that circle start? Where is the beginning point of the circle? So his logic will say him there must be a starting point, but he can't answer the question because a closed circle or a closed bowl is closed in itself and you cannot answer where did it start. Now you ask finally, what's the reason for all this? Why have they done it? We had a brainstorming session last year with some 20 scientists and we have asked us exactly the same question. If they were here and if they made us intelligent, what for?
Seekers, I guess this is the end.
Uh, I'm Alan Saunders, and I'll be back next week. Or, given that time is symmetrical, I was back last week.
The Return of the Cosmic Strangers with Eric von Daniken and Colin Wilson was produced exactly 30 years ago by Tony Barrell and Patrick Gibson for 2JJ, part of our return to the world of spooks and strangenesses. The spooky music came from The Spooky Men and Silver Mount Zion, and the philosophy from Alan Saunders and Hugh Price. Production designed by John Jacobs and Tony Barrell. I'm Brent Clough. See our website for more details and haunted links.
Lights out.
Yes, he said that, and that isn't all.
This story was based on fact.
Breathe it in. Lights out.